All right, we have a quorum, and we will come to order for the April 16th meeting of the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. First, we need minutes, motion to approve the minutes. Representative Davis?
Chair, I will make a motion to approve the minutes.
So Representative Davis moves that the minutes are adopted. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Chair Akam, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would, as a matter of fact. I would like to move adoption or move House File 4177.
Chair Akam moves House File 4177, and I think you also have a DE2.
I do, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the DE2 to get it before the committee. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Akam moves the DE2 to get it before the committee. No vote? Yeah, okay. Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our kind of committee package bill this year. And as I think about this bill, it's a modest bill that has a large impact. And when I look at the provisions that are in the bill, I kind of put them in two buckets. The first bucket is kind of the tools to accomplish our 100% clean energy goals. And the first in that, or the maybe the largest in the bill this year, is the Majority Leader Long's permitting reform bill. It's also important, Representative Kraft's grid enhancing technology, my interconnection bill, Representative Carroll's commercial PACE bill, along with the Solar App Plus, also Representative Holland's bill for the anaerobic digester to divert organic waste from our waste stream. And then the second bucket, as I think of the types of bills that we have, are really about decarbonizing buildings, and of which geothermal plays a big role. Representative Hollins has a bill to help Sabathany replace Thelma and Louise, which is good. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager has a bill to establish a work group to analyze geothermal. I have a bill for local units of government to look at the feasibility of geothermal planning grants. Representative Stevenson has a bill to establish geothermal pilot projects, as well as his bill that tweaks the ECO Act. And then Representative Kraft has a residential building codes rebate program. So, I mean, I think in all told, those are they can do some great things to achieve our goals of decarbonizing and cleaning up our electricity sector and looking on to other sectors as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back to you and nonpartisan staff to walk through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'll turn it over to nonpartisan staff to walk through the bill. Ashley, are you going to be first?
Mr. Chair, I'll be going through the spreadsheet that reflects Article 1 and 2 of the DE2. Starting on lines 20 and 21, these are the items to the Department of Commerce. On 21, there's $133,000 in fiscal year 25, and $265,000 in fiscal year 26 and 27 for grid-enhancing technologies. On line 22, there is $500,000 in fiscal year 25 for the thermal energy network projects. On line 23, there is $500,000 in fiscal year 25 for the residential energy code rebate program. And on page 2 of the spreadsheet, looking at the Public Utilities Commission, on line 27, there is $117,000 in fiscal year 25 and $157,000 in fiscal year 26 and 27 for the grid-enhancing technologies. On line 28, there is $166,000 in fiscal year 25 and $121,000 in fiscal year 26 and 27 for the permitting reform. On line 29, there's $111,000 in fiscal year 25, $111,000 in fiscal year 26, and $77,000 in fiscal year 27 for the docket proceedings for internet connection standards. On line 30, there's $39,000 in fiscal year 25 and $77,000 in fiscal year 26 for the thermal energy work group. Then lines 35 and 36 are the ombudsperson with the special revenue account revenue and then expenditure on the position. Then looking down at line 39, this is Article 2 of the DE, the renewable development account spending. On line 46, there's $5 million for the geothermal energy system at Sebathany. On line 47, there is $2,500,000 for the geothermal energy system grant program. On line 48, there is $5 million for the anaerobic digester. And on line 49, there is $1,700,000 for the solar app program. With the revenue from rate recovery, the total impact of the appropriations is $1 million in fiscal year 25.
Thank you, Ms. Eng. I think next, Mr. Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start my review with Article 3 of the bill, which begins on page 4. Article 3 concerns legislation dealing with geothermal energy. Section 1 is Representative Stevenson's, House File 4423. At the bottom of page 7 is new language, which indicates that natural gas innovation plans that are filed by CenterPoint after July 1, 2024, must now include spending that is at least 15% of their total spending on innovation plans for thermal energy networks projects. At the top of page 8, section 3 is Representative Akam's House File 4759. This establishes a grant program for local units of government to assess the feasibility and the cost of installing geothermal energy systems. At the bottom of page 9 in section 4, is Representative Henningsen Yeager's House File 4688, which directs the Public Utilities Commission to establish a working group to examine the current regulatory structure and to tell whether it's conducive to natural gas utilities deploying geothermal or are there barriers to that that should be addressed. On page 11 near the top is Section 5, which again is Representative Stevenson's House File 4423. Which instructs the Department of Commerce to conduct a study to determine the suitability of sites across the state for deploying thermal energy networks. On page 12 is Article 4 dealing with electric transmission, and as the Chair noted, a good portion of this article is dealing with Representative Long's House File 4700 bill, including Section 1, which amends the definition of large energy facility, the point being that large energy facilities are those that are required to get certificates of need from the Public Utilities Commission. And the changes that you see on lines 12.8 to 12.10 reduce the number and type of projects that need to get certificates of need. The next three sections are actually part of Representative Kraft's House File 3704 bill with respect to grid-enhancing technologies. Turn your attention to page 14 in the middle of the page. This requires state transmission plans, which are done biennially and submitted to the Public Utilities Commission, to, in their identification of alternative means for addressing transmission inadequacies, to also include grid-enhancing technologies as possible solutions to those problems. Section 5 on page 15 brings us back to Representative Long's House File 4700. And at the bottom of the page is language that specifies conditions under which a high voltage transmission line, alternative endpoints for that line must be assessed by the Public Utilities Commission in a siting procedure. At the bottom of page 16 is Section 6, this is a section in the Certificate of Need law that exempts projects from the requirement to obtain a Certificate of Need. And you can see at the bottom of page 17 in Clause 9, a new exception is what are generally called GenTi lines, which are transmission lines that are directly associated with distributed energy projects that directly interconnect them to the grid. So the projects listed under large wind energy conversion system, solar energy system, and energy storage system, the Gentile lines for those projects do not require a certificate of need. Also, right below that, in Clause 10, energy storage systems do not require a certificate of need, and neither does relocation of an existing high-voltage transmission line where the voltage is not changed. On page 18 in Section 7 is language that also exempts projects from the certificate of need process. This is for wind energy conversion systems or solar electric generation facilities. The only change there is on page 18, line 12, specifying the subdivisions that those projects are in. At the bottom of page 18 is Section 8. A little background information is necessary here. This is the state's right of first refusal statute. When a high voltage transmission line is approved by MISO, an incumbent electric transmission facility has the right to decide to build that transmission facility if it's going to its own facilities. And as you can see on line 28, current law gives them 90 days to make that decision and communicate it. This this language reduces that to 30 days. And at the top of page 19, if an incumbent facility decides to build a transmission line, they now have 18 months before the certificate of need must be submitted to the Public Utilities Commission. This language reduces that to 12 months. Section 9 in the middle of page 19 is a section in the siting and routing process of the Public Utilities Commission that applies to both. There are two processes for site and route permits at the commission. One is major for larger facilities. One has been called alternative, but is now under this language called the standard review process. The next few sections apply to both of those. And one of the important changes is on page 20 in the middle. Right now, applicants are allowed to propose two different sites for power facilities or two routes for high voltage transmission lines. This language requires them only to propose a single site. At the top of page 23, there's language with respect to a draft permit that requires any issues or alternatives that need to be evaluated in an environmental review document to be identified when the draft permit is issued. The next major language change is on page 26, subdivision 12, which says the commission must require as a condition of permit issuance inclusion or must include the requirement to pay prevailing wage to construction of the facilities that are being permitted. At the bottom of page 27, section 11 is language for the major review of applications. These major reviews require an environmental impact statement to be done by the Commissioner of Commerce. And on page 28, there is a change in subdivision 2, the public hearing. Right now, all those major permits have to have a public hearing before an administrative law judge using the contested case hearing procedures. This language allows or requires the administrative law judge only if the commission determines that a disputed matter exists that requires clarification through expert testimony. Line 25 on page 28 states that the commission shall make a decision on a request for a site or route permit within a year after a complete application is filed. At the bottom of page 29 is now the new called standard review process. And the subdivision 2 at the bottom of that page and on top of page 30, what's being done there is an inclusion of more projects in the standard review process, i.e. the shorter review process, than previously was the case. At the bottom of page 30, subdivision 5, environmental review, another change is that for these shorter projects, it's now the applicant who is preparing an environmental assessment rather than the Department of Commerce. At near the top of page 33 in subdivision 4 regarding that environmental assessment. This is a new provision that provides any person at a public hearing or the commissioner or any state agency from requiring or requesting the commissioner to do an environmental addendum if there were issues that were missed or were not thoroughly investigated in the initial environmental review assessment that was done by the applicant. Section 14 at the bottom of page 34 is new language that sets up a separate process for processing permit amendments to existing permits. And section 15 at the bottom of page 35, actually the top of page 36, lists projects that do not require a site or route permit from the commission. Section 16 on page 36 reflects the fact that since there are a number of projects that are now no longer required to obtain a certificate of need, one of the elements of the certificate of need review process was a cost review by the commission. This language states that if a project that's applying for a site permit did not undergo certificate of need analysis, it is required to obtain, or it is required that the commission do a cost analysis of that project, and says that the commission may reject the site or route permit application based solely on project costs that it determines are not reasonable and prudent. At the bottom of page 37, section 19, is another portion of Representative Kraft's House File 3704. And this requires in the next state transmission plan that I believe is due in November of 2025, an analysis by utility owners and utilities that own more than 750 miles of transmission within the state of Minnesota to identify their points, the location of points of congestion on their transmission system, how often that happens, and estimate also the costs of that, and put that in the state transmission report for the next report due in November. They're also to evaluate the technical feasibility of implementing the grid enhancement technologies that we talked about earlier, and to analyze the cost of doing that, and to propose an implementation plan of how that would be done. The commission would review all these plans and issue an order requiring implementation of an approved plan after setting up what a threshold of cost effectiveness for implementation. Section 20 on page 40 is a list of instructions to the revisers, asking the reviser to incorporate several portions of Chapter 216F, which are now the wind siting process chapter, back into Section 216E, so all the siting language is in one chapter. And Section 21 is lists language that is being repealed, some of which is obsolete, some of which is technical. It's all relating to the site and review process that House File 4700 makes changes to. The bottom of page 40 begins Article 5 on solar energy, and Section 1 is Representative Carroll's House File 5171, which gives incentives to permitting authorities that deploy Solar App Plus, a software developed by the U.S. Department of Energy that allows the review process for solar energy projects to be automated and speeded up. On page 42, it states that those incentives can be somewhere between $5,000 and $20,000. On page 43, section 43 is Representative Akam's interconnection bill, which requires the commission to set up a docket by September 1st of this year to establish by order generic standards for the sharing of costs among developers at congested or constrained locations that have to be expanded by the utilities. Right now, the total cost of paying those expansions are due by the first person who wants an expansion. This would set up a process by which all the several project owners would share the cost to make it more likely that expansion is going to occur. and this is setting up a proceeding, and the language on this page instructs the commission as to what issues need to be addressed in that proceeding. At the bottom of page 44, section 3 is also part of Representative Akam's House File 5097, which establishes a new position at the Public Utilities Commission of Interconnection Ombudsman to track interconnection disputes and facilitate their resolution. The position is funded by a surcharge on an application for distributed generation resources. Article 6 on page 46 begins a large article with a number of miscellaneous components, the first one of which is Representative Akam's House File 4975. The change is on page 50, which strikes language requiring a report regarding the availability of funds in the renewable development account, which I understand is done elsewhere anyway. Section 2 on page 51 is the beginning of 10 sections from Representative Stevenson's House File 4574, which is amending the ECO law, which is the main law that utilities use to make conservation investments. And deals with fuel switching, which was brought into ECO in changes made in 2021 and are further developed here. Section 2 allows the commission to develop financial incentive plans for fuel switching. Section 3 at the top of 52 is a definition of data mining facility. Section 4 in the middle of that page strikes language which will then make this definition of efficient fuel switching improvement consistent with a definition that we'll run into a few pages later. Section 5 removes the sales to data mining facilities from the definition of gross annual retail energy sales, which is a concept used to determine what the utility's energy savings goal for that year might be. At the bottom of page 53 in section 6 is language that reduces the energy savings goals for natural gas facilities from 1.5 to 1.0% of annual gas sales. And at the near the bottom of page 54 in that same section is language stricken language that removes a spending cap for fuel switching projects, which is currently in the statute. On page 59, kind of in the middle of the page, there's new language which allows for munis and co-ops that specifies that conservation that results from efficient fuel switching improvements get the spending on that is allowed to be counted towards the utility's low-income spending requirements. Section 9 at the bottom of page 59 amends the method of measuring the impact of fuel switching on on energy consumption and also on greenhouse gas emissions. At the top of page 62 in section 10 is also removing a cap on fuel switching spending. This does it for public utilities, whereas the previous one was for munis and co-ops. Section 12 on page 64 allows public utilities to propose a fuel switching goal. And the stricken language towards the bottom of the page allows the net benefits that come from fuel switching to count for fuel switching, which they hadn't been able to do before. In the middle of page 65 is language for public utilities that was the same for municipal utilities and co-ops regarding changing the way fuel switching net energy savings are measured. In the middle of page 66, this is section 13, is language that is stricken that allows fuel switching incentives to be offered even if utilities energy savings goal is below 1%. The next three sections are from Representative Akins, House File 4177, and they allow the Commissioner of Commerce, or they specify that the Commissioner has jurisdiction over the entirety of Section 216C. Section 17 is new language that we haven't seen before in this committee, which is an amendment to the benchmarking statute that Representative Kraft carried last year. It changes some definitions on the next two pages, two and a half pages, actually. And beginning on page 73 with Section 18 is Representative Carroll's House File 3946, making changes to the property assessed clean energy statute. Section 18 removes the requirement that energy projects be cost effective, and also the requirement they reduce energy use if instead that they reduce greenhouse gas emissions. This on page 75, section 24 is one of the areas which this language broadens PACE to now include beyond energy resiliency improvements, which are listed in the middle of the page, things like structural integrity for seismic events, indoor air quality, resistance to wind, fire, and flooding. These become now subject or capable of being financed through PACE. The point being that what PACE does is allow the loans to be repaid over time as part of the property owner's property taxes. So that can, under this language, that can be done for these kinds of resiliency improvements. It can also be done for water improvements at the top of page 76 in subdivision 14. And other changes that are made to the PACE language are on page 79. The loan can now be up to 30% of the approved value of the of the property on which the project occurs, as opposed to 20%. And can be payable over in 30 equal installments rather than 20, as you see in the middle of page 79. And page 80 is Representative Kraft's House File 4242, Residential Energy Rating Rebate Program. This piggybacks on a federal program that has incentives for developers to build energy efficient homes. And this program would, in addition, award $5,000 per qualifying single-family house and $2,500 for each multiple residency unit that qualifies. And that concludes the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Eliff. We're now going to go to public testimony. First is Kevin Pranis. Kevin, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Akim, Chair Kraft. Kevin Pranis on behalf of Leona, Minnesota, North Dakota. Keep it very short. Appreciate the work that this committee has been doing this session to put together, I think, a good package of bills, permitting reform being most important to us. And I'd say that's critically important. I've testified to this before. We simply won't meet our energy goals without making changes to make it simpler and easier to build the resources that we need and the transmission we need. But just as important, we need this to manage growing load, whether we're talking about data centers that want to locate here, manufacturing that we'd like to bring back in this country, or we're talking about increased demand from electric vehicles and heat pumps. We need a lot more electricity. We need to move a lot more electricity and to have modern systems to manage it. And so appreciate all the hard work on that bill with Chair Akim and Majority Leader Long in the House, as well as with Chair Frentz in the Senate. I think we're going to end up with a really good bill, hopefully one that combines the best aspects of the bills in each House. And I will just say that we appreciate the dates here that help move the process along in the House version, as well as Majority Leader Long's proposal around the need for utilities to file their notice of intent to build transmission and to file certificates of need a little quicker than we do today. I also want to appreciate other aspects of this bill, particularly, I'll mention on permitting reform, Representative Carroll's solar app program. Again, anything we can do to make it easier for cities to allow people to build things that we need, not just in energy, is helpful. On the thermal energy bill, Representative Hemmingson-Yeager's bill on utility thermal energy, geothermal is an incredibly potent resource, and we need to figure out where it fits in, and we don't know that yet, but there's a lot of job and energy opportunities there, as well as stability in energy bills. And so I think that these are the right steps to take to do planning, to look at what the best sites are, and to get together a stakeholder group that can start figuring out how that fits within our regulatory framework, right, whether existing gas utilities, whether there's other utilities that could be providing thermal energy services. And then on the renewable development account, we appreciate the appropriations for the geothermal project at Sabathany that Representative Hollins has proposed and the other geothermal grants. We also strongly support the proposal for an anaerobic digester, $5 million in funding that Representative Hollins proposed for the DEMCON facility that's critical to helping gas utilities start meeting their decarbonization goals, as well as getting rid of methane that's currently going in the atmosphere. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we have Victoria Reinhart. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Reinhart. Please, when you get situated, introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Akam. I am Ramsey County Commissioner Victoria Reinhart, and I am here today on behalf of Ramsey County, the Recycling and Energy Board, which is Ramsey and Washington Counties, and the Partnership on Waste and Energy, which is Ramsey, Washington, and Hennepin Counties. And along with, there's a lot of other partners that are involved in this anaerobic digestion project and offer their thanks as well. So this has truly been a group effort, but we are so pleased and want to say a huge thank you to the committee that for including $5 million in the renewable development account funding for the Ramsey Washington DEMCON anaerobic digestion project. This project represents an exciting new technology to our area to invest in technologies to manage our waste and create renewable natural gas, move Minnesota forward in our climate and recycling goals. And not only does this produce natural gas, renewable natural gas, but it also then significantly reduces greenhouse gases from emissions. We appreciate the committee's investment and the commitment to this exciting project. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right, great, thanks. Next we have Kent Sulem. Welcome back to the committee. When you get situated, please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. Thanks to Chair Acoma and Vice Chair Kraft's willingness to work with us and Mr. Eloff not hanging up on us, we were able to... We were able to resolve many of the issues that we had, clarifications, so we're very grateful to see things like the Eagle Reform provisions in this bill. However, we do still have some concerns regarding the permitting reform, in particular the ROFR provisions that were added into the permitting reform. It's a particular concern to munis that our time period to exercise our right under ROFR has been reduced from 90 to 30 days. That simply is not enough time to give it the thoughtful consideration to reach out to potential partners to examine options. And so we would respectfully request that be restored to 90 or at least 60 as a possible compromise. We believe that doing this will allow things to remain streamlined without having the consequences of bad mistakes being made because people are having to rush decisions instead of giving it the thought that it requires. It's important to remember at the municipal level, we're concerned about costs that are borne directly by our taxpayers, our ratepayers, our neighbors. And so in order to help with that, We do support the level B restored from 30 to 90, or at least a 60 compromise. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Audrey Partridge. Welcome to committee. When you get situated, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Akam, Chair Kraft. Thank you for having me here today. I'm Audrey Partridge with Center for Energy and Environment. I am here to testify in support of the House Energy and Climate Omnibus Bill. It's all around an excellent bill, and it touches so many areas of our energy system and moves us forward in so many different ways. In particular, I'd like to voice CEE's support for House File 4574, which is a bill to update and streamline the Energy Conservation and Optimization, or ECO Act, as it is included in the House Omnibus Bill. Thank you to Chair Akam for prioritizing and including this bill in the omnibus. And thank you to Representative Stevenson for authoring this important bill and working so collaboratively across the aisle with our Senate author as well. The updates to the ECO statute were discussed and informed by a broad coalition of stakeholders, including clean energy organizations, cooperative utilities, municipal utilities, investor-owned utilities, and the Minnesota Department of Commerce. These updates will reduce unnecessary administrative burden and redundancy within the regulatory framework for efficient fuel switching, will increase opportunities for additional research and development, will expand opportunities for consumer-owned utilities to provide efficiency services for their low-income customers, align gas savings goals across investor-owned and co-op and muni, municipal-owned gas utilities, and provide a new opportunity for electric investor-owned utilities to file efficient fuel switching goals and propose an incentive mechanism through the regulatory process. ECO is an incredibly important program that provides savings for participating customers and the utility system overall. This bill will help to support implementation for utilities and the Department of Commerce and ensure that customers have access to opportunities to save energy and money. Thank you, Chair Akam, for your leadership, and thank you, Mr. Eloff, for putting up with us.
Common theme here, Mr. Next, we have Martin Maleka from Isaiah, and I apologize if I butchered your last name, but welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Kraft and Chair Akam. My name is Marty Maleka, close enough, and I am a member of Isaiah. I'm also a lifelong Minnesota resident, and my wife and I have been owners of our home in New Brighton for 38 years. During that time, especially lately, the consequences of climate change have become increasingly clear, even in New Brighton. We had a minor extreme weather event in 2011, 5 inches of rain in 5 hours. It washed out a railroad track, and it caused a number of people in New Brighton, including us, to have water in their basements. And that was minor compared to what has happened and will be happening in other parts of Minnesota and our country. My wife and I have an adult son, daughter-in-law, and 3-year-old grandchild living in Texas. The weather extremes they have endured include oppressively high temperature and the other extreme, a weeks-long cold snap in 2021 that caused power failures in the Texas grid. We have nieces and nephews in California where the drought, extreme rain events, and wildfires are adversely affecting their lives. Climate change is real, and the consequences are going to get worse. We need to do all we can to decarbonize our lives quickly, and that includes our homes. And that includes eliminating fossil fuels as the source of heat for our homes. There are many advantages of geothermal heat for homes, but the upfront costs are significant. Our current home furnace is 24 years old. When it finally goes, we will likely be looking at an air source heat pump. I investigated geothermal, but between the space constraints of our typical quarter-acre suburban lot and the prohibitive upfront costs, as much as we would like to, individual geothermal is not going to happen for us. Those space and cost constraints, though, can be minimized if geothermal is done as a network for a neighborhood. Together, we can accomplish so much more than we can as individuals. Minnesota needs the provisions of this bill to become law. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, we have Mary Zoudke. And welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and correct any mispronunciation I did, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Kraft and members of the committee. My name is Mary Zadke, and thank you for allowing me to testify today in support of the network geothermal bills. I'm a resident of New Brighton and have been involved in the climate action team for my city. As a part of the process, I've learned some trends in climate that concern me. Increased drought, significant. Increased flood risk, lowered air quality, lower water quality, and personally I've observed several of those already as I was breathing air last summer and seeing the algae blooms in our water in our lakes, all leading to kind of sustaining not sustaining good growth of our plants and our trees. I volunteered to water more trees in our city. And also it's not supporting the wildlife, the fish, and it's gonna affect our quality. You know, we all depend on all of it to have good quality of life. The intervention in our city that was deemed that would be of highest impact if we were to do it was geothermal. But it is also the hardest to implement. So we approved many valuable interventions, but we did also include a pilot for geothermal, looping in a neighborhood with some high density, some business, some residential. And this would follow an assessment to the suitability of the technology for our city. So a lot of times we're kind of hesitant to get started on something that's new or difficult. And I appreciate this bill because it helps us to start those things and to learn from our experience. It takes about 7 to 10 years for the infrastructure to pay for itself and to break even. After that, it's actually 65% cheaper to heat and cool with geothermal. The infrastructure itself takes about 50 years, you know, lasts about 50 years. So in the long haul, it's not only good for the environment, it's economically sound. So, I know that Mounds View, actually also in my neighborhood, that district, school district is going to be starting 3 locations of network geothermal starting this summer, which was exciting for me to hear because I just learned about it. This bill gives us a path forward to starting now to move towards and getting this infrastructure up because it's not something you can just do like that. And so I love that this is being planned for and it's being supported. And climate change requires a multifaceted approach of which network geothermal is an integral part. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to testify? All right, with that, we will move to member discussion. Questions? Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Akam, I'm just looking at your bill. You know, one of the questions was brought up a couple of times. It was during the initial testimony when the bill was heard. And then I think it might be in some written testimony here as well. And I would just encourage, I think there's some letters in here, I'm guessing, that are positive and negative potentially on the bill. But that 30-day, switching that time period of wait to 30-day, I know it was a question of whether or not some of those times were a feasible amount, because depending on what time of year it was, because if you're talking a 30-day mandate, is that a 30-day working day mandate? Is that 30 calendar days? you know, is that specified? And, you know, if we're talking 30 days, but it's over the holidays, that could be really not reachable. Where are those conversations, and what where has that been left?
Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Sivinsky. I appreciate the question, and I appreciate the concerns brought up by Mr. Sulem. And I think the conversations are absolutely continuing to happen. And as you know, this bill will continue to have stops both in Ways and Means, the floor, as well as conference committee. So there will continue to be a lot of opportunity for amendments to ensure it is the best it can be and has strong support.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just kind of a secondary question. We were talking about this, you know, you're vastly changing the amount and very specific on what type of projects will fall under the umbrella of being protected from certificates of need and the acquisition for them. Is that kind of an admission that a lot of those projects wouldn't probably receive a certificate of need because it's essentially extra energy on the grid? Is that kind of is that the point of that provision?
Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reasoning is that having passed the 100% clean energy by 2040 bill is in essence saying we need to do this. And so it's recognizing that those types of energy generation will help us meet those goals. And so we have demonstrated that we feel there's a need. And so the formal process isn't as, like we've already done that by passing that.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other questions? All right, Cherry, can we do any closing comments before we adjourn?
Well, I thank you for the time, and I appreciate the advocates coming to share their thoughts, and we will continue to work on this bill as it moves forward, and thank you. Hope we can earn your support.
Thank you, and tomorrow we'll be voting on this and taking up at least one amendment. Okay.
You want these back,
yes. Yeah, okay, and with that, we are adjourned.
Excellent.